Chapter 2. Talking Trash Under My Window. Breaking into a cutting-edge supercomputer is surprisingly easy. It helps that Ilya has access to technology from Strand 1221's near future. It's advanced enough to circumvent the current security, but similar enough to be compatible with the facility's systems. I can't shake the feeling that it should be more of a challenge. The surveillance cameras have suspiciously helpful blind spots. Several alarms are already offline when Ilya goes to disable them. The map overlaid on his optic lens prompts him to turn left, down one of the long rows of processor cores. They're indistinguishable, as far as he can tell. He doesn't know how anyone navigates this place to do maintenance. He turns twice more, delving deeper into the labyrinth, until he reaches the unit highlighted on his map. It looks exactly like the others, stacked blades of servers, with a cluster of thick cables secured along the sides. Ilya hasn't become the best agent among the raiders by ignoring his gut. He has sharp reaction times and an uncanny intuition for what his opponents will do next. Right now, those instincts are telling him that something about this doesn't feel right. Ilya switches on his infrared filter. His target processor shows up as a colorless gap, no longer generating heat. It's dead or disabled, quarantined from the rest of the supercomputer and unable to carry the virus that Ilya had been sent here to plant. He bangs his fist against the metal frame and exhales hard. Hollander has outmaneuvered him again. It's the latest example in a string of humiliations. Objectively, Ilya knows that they're evenly matched, and that he's been ahead of Hollander as often as he's fallen behind. He also knows that the Colonel won't see it that way. The only metrics Ilya is judged by are his failures. He pushes himself off the frame and turns partly away before pausing. One corner of the server blade is marred. Black paint has been scratched off to reveal the silver metal beneath. Ilya looks closer and sees similar marks on the screws holding the front panel in place. He's curious, and his mission is already fucked. Ilya takes apart the unit. He revises his opinion of the situation once his hands are in the guts of the machine. This isn't Hollander's work. The raiders have the edge when it comes to computer power. They've built, upgraded, and stolen enough to fuel a new digital age. And they're scrappy enough to stay on the cutting edge. Where the Voyageurs have an advantage is biotechnology. They tend to integrate rather than equip, melding genetics and computing into one flawless design. Whoever took out Ilya's target before him, they did it by hand, with metal tools. And they'd left evidence behind. The plastic casing around one of the cables has been scored imprecisely by a knife, and one of the copper strands of wire has been twisted back on itself where it frayed loose. There's a screw missing in one of the metal plates. Hollander would never be so untidy. Footsteps echo off the bare walls. Ilya swears and fumbles components back into place, jamming the front panel onto the processor just as Hollander rounds the corner at the end of the aisle. Hollander freezes when he sees Ilya. His eyes dart from Ilya to the unit, obviously taken off guard, and Ilya's hunch hardens into certainty. Hollander turns to bolt back the way he'd come, and Ilya calls out before he can disappear. Wait! Hollander looks back over his shoulder and hesitates. Ilya holds up both hands, showing himself to be unarmed. That isn't completely true, but the sentiment is honest. He has no intention of harming Hollander. Ilya tips his head toward the server blade, then takes a step back to give Hollander room. He lets curiosity do the rest. Hollander stays put for a handful of seconds, then moves cautiously toward Ilya. He stops in front of the unit to peer at the subject of Ilya's little investigation, and his shoulders stiffen in realization. Ilya waits patiently while Hollander carries out his own inspection. They're standing close enough for him to imagine he can feel the heat of Hollander's body next to him in the chilled room. The fabric of Hollander's anti-static fiber jumpsuit is black enough to swallow even the harsh fluorescent light, and soft enough to cling to every curve of muscle. Hollander glances sideways at him, and Ilya drags his eyes reluctantly up from the swell of Hollander's ass. It's a nice ass. Ilya has noticed this several times before. This isn't your work, Hollander says, without a shred of uncertainty. Ilya feels a stupid little thrill that his closest competition knows Ilya's style as well as Ilya knows his.
No, not yours either.
Obviously, Hollander says. Anyone else might have leaned into the contempt of that word, made it a snide condescension. Hollander's statement is a simple statement of fact.
Not any of the voyageurs,
Hollander continues, confirming Ilya's suspicion. He darts another glance at Ilya.
None of the raiders either?
Ilya shakes his head. Hollander looks back at the processor, brow furrowed. Then he does exactly what Ilya had, replacing everything as it had been, tidying away the evidence of sabotage.
We shouldn't talk here, Hollander says.
Ilya taps the thick blue and red hoses on the back of the unit behind them.
Liquid cooling center. Plenty of waterfall noise. It will drown out surveillance.
Hollander mutters something that sounds like, you hope. He searches Ilya's face for a moment before suggesting cautiously,
you know who did this.
Ilya shrugs. I have suspicions. Hollander's gaze drops to Ilya's lower lip, sucked in between his teeth. Ilya is suddenly far less interested in that saboteur than he is in the way Hollander's eyes linger on the wet gleam of Ilya's mouth. He takes a step forward. It's the wrong move. Hollander snaps out of his distraction and shifts away, putting distance between them. He hesitates one last time, then raises his arm and presses his thumb against the metal frame of the processing core. Before Ilya can call after him a second time, he's turned out of sight, disappearing into the maze. Ilya doesn't try to chase him. He studies the frame instead, with the faintest sheen of oil left behind from Hollander's touch. He scans the whorls of Hollander's thumbprint, and the lines rearrange themselves into a new pattern.
Lily, it's too dangerous for us to have this conversation on a mission. Both sides will monitor any way they consider critical. You know they'll be watching and listening. You have my biometric code now, so you can read my encrypted messages. I'll find somewhere else for us to talk freely. Or I'll find you.
Jane. Strand 1822 is nearly uninhabitable. The landscape on the surface is scarred by acid rain, atmospheric pollution so thick that it's impossible for humans to breathe the air. The world has been relinquished to cockroaches and tardigrades. It's one of the first major casualties of the Time War, the sites of so many skirmishes and operations that it's considered past saving, forfeits by both sides in favor of more viable battlegrounds. That makes it one of the few places the voyageurs and the raiders are both likely to avoid. Shane makes his way through the subterranean tunnels that crisscross the island. The network extends for more than 30 kilometers, and while the radiation and decay aren't limited to the surface, conditions are far better underground. He unseals the pressurized hatch that leads into the biosphere. There are a few structures left standing in this world, like this one. Closed ecological systems that survive the ravages of the war outside. Lush, vibrant gardens, teeming with life. As fragile as a soap bubble. The water comes as a shock. Shane's doused completely in seconds, the downpour hitting him hard enough to stagger him. He lunges forward by instinct, trying to escape the thick curtain of water obscuring his vision. Rozanov's voice cuts through his alarm.
It's okay. A decontamination shower. Come this way.
Shane follows the sound and finds himself wading through a shallow pool, the artificial waterfall behind him still pouring over the entrance to the tunnels. He wipes his face with both hands, feeling like a drowned rat, before looking up to see Rozanov standing a few meters ahead of him. Rozanov clearly hadn't fared any better against the unexpected shower. His hair is slicked back from his angular face and dripping onto his shoulders. A black and yellow hazmat suit is peeled down to his waist, displaying wet, gleaming chest muscles. Shane's entire body goes hot so fast that it feels like a radiation burn. By some miracle, Rozanov doesn't seem to notice. He's too busy gaping at Shane in turn.
What is this? Are you part fish too?
Shane looks down at his exposed hands and wrists. Now that he's paying attention, he can feel the plates that have shifted on the surface of his skin. The faint pattern of leptoid scales that must show along his neck, where the water has pulled his clothes askew.
Oh, no, it's only when I'm submerged. I can mostly control them. I was just surprised. They're for hydrodynamics? He doesn't know why he makes that into a question, as though he doesn't know his own body anymore. Rosanoff mouths the word back at him, still marveling. His gaze drifts all the way down to Shane's thighs, just above the water level, before traveling back up to his face. Shane is beginning to wonder if he really did get a hit of thermal radiation somehow. He clears his throat. You were going to tell me what happened in Nashville. Rosanoff smirks at him, holding eye contact.
I don't think that's what you came here for.
He raises his eyebrows and looks pointedly down, so Shane does the same. He realizes first that he's hard, and second that with his clothes plastered to his skin, there's no way to disguise that fact as anything else. Rosanoff wades slowly toward him. Shane doesn't notice himself moving away to maintain a safe distance until his back hits the smooth, wet stone beside the waterfall. He lifts his chin when Rosanoff cages him in against the rocks. It should be defiant. Except that Shane can't stop staring at Rosanoff's lips.
We're safe here, Rosanoff tells him.
Shane doesn't think they're safe anywhere, but he doesn't want to argue. There are too many other desires clamoring under his skin. Rosanoff kisses open mouth and slow, like he wants to devour Shane and take his time savoring. Shane is too hungry for that. He's ravenous. Rosanoff pulls back between kisses, and Shane chases after him, unwilling to break contact. He slides his tongue into Rosanoff's mouth and fists his hands into the bunched fabric at Rosanoff's waist. Rosanoff's hands are in his hair, on his chest, at his throat. Shane's last trace of caution evaporates in their wake. They strip each other bare, still kissing, only pausing to stare at the display of muscles flexing under newly exposed skin. Rosanoff maneuvers them away from the wall, guiding them with his hands on Shane's hips. When Shane misses a step on the slippery bottom of the pool, Rosanoff wraps strong hands around Shane's thighs and lifts him up out of the water. He lays Shane out on the mossy bank and crawls on top of him, water streaming off him to drip onto Shane's goose-pimpled skin. Rosanoff's hand curls around his jaw, holding him in place for another kiss. When he pulls back, there's something stuck to Shane's skin, right at his pulse point. There's also a thin wire leading from its back to Rosanoff's fingertip. Shane freezes. Rosanoff must feel him lock up, because he breaks off from going in for another kiss and pulls back to look at Shane's face. Shane is thinking about the Raiders' conducted energy devices and electroshock weapons. How he's soaking wet and defenseless. How little it will take to stop his heart. Rosanoff holds up his hands. It's the same gesture he made in Nashville, the one that promises he means no harm. It's somewhat undermined by the pads Shane can see on each of his fingertips, sticky white rings around a bright metal center.
Are those fucking electrodes?
Shane scrabbles at his neck to tear the adhesive away. Rosanoff makes a little distressed noise, although Shane can't tell whether it's in response to Shane foiling his plan or the panic quickening Shane's breath. Rosanoff reaches for Shane's throat again, and Shane nearly jabs an elbow into his windpipe before he realizes Rosanoff is trying to help him. Rosanoff gets the adhesive detached and untangles the razor-thin wire from Shane's fingers, cradling them carefully as he checks for damage. They stare at each other for a long moment, unmoving. Then Rosanoff says cautiously,
"This isn't how you do it, in the Voyageurs."
Shane's heart rate hasn't come down, still pounding in his chest.
"How we do what, exactly? Sex?"
Rosanoff nods.
"Calibration."
Finding the right words in English looks like a struggle. He presses one of the electrodes against his own chest in demonstration. Shane watches the muscle jump.
"Small shock. To find the best spots."
"Erogenous zones." Shane relaxes slowly onto the moss, amusement seeping in to replace his shock. "No, we don't do that. I could just tell you." Rosanoff smirks down at him, all swagger and confidence again. He leans down and murmurs into Shane's ear,
"And where would you think to tell me about, besides your dick?"
Shane's having trouble thinking about anything that isn't his dick. Rozanov must see the answer on his face, because he chuckles and kisses Shane's ear. Shane shivers, although that might come from the cold water still dripping off Rozanov's wet curls.
Tell me if you don't like it, and we stop.
Rozanov kisses down Shane's neck, distracting him from the light brush of Rozanov's fingers. When he finally pulls back, wires trail from his fingers to the adhesive pad stuck all over Shane's body, like he's some kind of sexy puppet master.
Tell me,
he says again, ducking down for another kiss. And then Shane's nerve endings light up as Rozanov starts fucking calibrating him.
Fuck!
Shane's spine bows off the ground, pinprick shocks dancing across his skin. Rozanov slides an arm under his back, supporting him while his muscles jump and he curses in two different languages. It doesn't hurt, exactly. It's more like a buzz under his skin, a tingle that travels from his nerve endings through his entire body. He doesn't know how this is supposed to tell Rozanov anything about erogenous zones, because every single tap and twitch feels like it's directly wired to his dick. Rozanov is still kissing him, even with Shane panting, mouth open and slack. His hand roams over Shane's face, fingers threading through his hair. There's a single electrode still stuck to the pad of his thumb. Shane turns his head and sucks Rozanov's thumb between his lips. He feels the adhesive catch and stick, hears Rozanov groan,
"Fuck, Hollander!"
and then the sweet sting of a shock against his tongue. Rozanov presses his thumb down on Shane's tongue and kisses Shane around it, licking into Shane's mouth. There's a polite beep, and the fire crackling through Shane's body gradually abates. He goes limp, breathing hard, already feeling halfway wrecked. Rozanov peels the sticky little pads from Shane's skin and detaches the wires from his own fingertips, tossing them aside.
"Well," Rozanov says after a moment, "that was fun."
Shane's mouth drops open again.
"Wait, that was it?"
"Voyageurs do it differently."
Rozanov asks it with such smug, shit-eating innocence that Shane tackling him onto the ground feels like an out-of-body experience, fueled purely by outrage and horny indignation. He resurfaces from his lust-induced blackout with both hands on Rozanov's chest, Rozanov's hips gripped tight between his knees, and a thin trail of saliva snapping between his mouth and Rozanov's lower lip.
"I don't know, I can't calibrate you," Shane says.
He doesn't wait for whatever smirking comeback Rozanov is waiting on his tongue. His sensory receptors are in overdrive, converting every point of contact into electrical signals that drown out everything else. He wants to get his hands on Rozanov, his mouth around him, the blissful weight and pressure of him everywhere against Shane's skin. Shane's body knows what it wants. He can figure out the rest as he goes.
"Jane, the agent you wanted to know about is called Hunter. I see him sometimes on missions, never when I see you. I thought he might be a defector to your side. I tell you, because you're very annoying about this, even when I give you much better things to think about. I hid this message in fiber optic cable, so I could imagine your face when you see it. Did you get hard remembering the calibration wires? I want to fuck you next time. I think when I'm inside you, you would beg for me with your pretty mouth. I think you want that too. Until next time, Lily."